Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Landing in Landers by Laura Bogner, read by the author, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver.
The unusual woman floats towards the girls outside of Natural Sisters. Her name is Minerva, and she wears a flowing silver tunic that billows around her like a butterfly. Oversized sunglasses shield her elliptical eyes, and a large hat covers her bald head. She sits down next to the girls and watches them scroll aimlessly on their iPhones. The girls look up for a moment, mesmerized by the strange woman, and then go back to pecking away at their phones. Minerva reaches into her satchel and pulls out a small jar of expensive cream and massages it into her glowing white skin with her long, tapered fingers. She takes a sip from her kombucha and travels back in time to when she was their age. Minerva thought the smartphone was a dumb idea when her first love had described his vision. The year was 1953, and he predicted, as they snuggled under the night sky, that this device would someday change his world. She listened quietly as she watched a shooting star fall towards Earth. She considered human intelligence to be inferior, but George spoke with such passion, she thought that maybe he was the exception. As a young girl in her 20s, Minerva daydreamed her first journey away from home would be someplace exciting. She was hoping for Saturn or Jupiter. She pouted dramatically when her mother, Queen Venusia, informed her that instead, she was sending her to Earth. "Earth," Minerva whined. It certainly did not have a nice ring to it like Saturn did, and everyone from Venus knew that Earth was light years behind. Venus had been ruled by women for the past trillion years. War was a thing of the past, and Venusians lived well into their 300s. "This is why I'm sending you to Earth, Minerva darling," her mother said patiently. "I am sending you to the wayward planet because Earthlings are still fighting with each other all the time, and their lifespans are far too short. We need to teach them to step outside of themselves for the better good of the universe." And so, later that summer, Minerva boarded the pink spacecraft shaped like a heart for her first solo trip to Earth. She would be collaborating with a friend that her mother had been telepathing with, UFOologist George Van Tassel, in a place called Landers. "He must be a real tool," Minerva muttered when George wasn't there to meet her. "Goddess damn it," she cursed when she broke a heel on her new boots as she hitchhiked her way to his cave at Giant Rock. What George Van Tassel lacked in manners, he made up for in the bedroom. George had confided to Minerva that he and his wife had nothing in common anymore. His wife had absolutely no interest in otherworldly contact, but, he hinted, she didn't mind if he did. It didn't take long before George and Minerva had fallen madly in love. They giggled like teenagers as they pored over their designs for their anti-aging chamber, the Integratron. It took Van Tassel's wife a couple of years, but eventually she caught on to their affair. One day she was doing laundry, and she found Minerva's Vibratron right smack in the middle of the bed. Apparently, she did mind his otherworldly contact, and there was a big fight with lots of screaming and tears. Then things got really ugly when she took a hammer to Minerva's glass communication tower, smashing it to bits, leaving her stranded on Earth. "This must be what Earthlings call jealousy," Minerva exclaimed. On Venus, there was only love, so jealousy did not exist. In the end, Minerva had been right about the Earthlings. They were inferior beings, and George turned out to be no different. He went crying back to his wife after she threatened to divorce him. "Fine! Live under a rock for all I care," Minerva shouted as she stormed out of the Integraton. She found a cute little room to rent at the Joshua Tree Inn. With their relationship in shambles, their work was stalled, and Minerva knew it was time to go. She invited Van over to say goodbye the night before she left. It had been a while since they had seen each other. Maybe it was the ionic charge of the summer rains, but their chemistry was so strong that night, they slept together one last time. Minerva left for San Francisco the next morning with the rejuvenation formulas tucked safely in her silver valise, and unbeknownst to her, Van Tassel's baby growing in her belly. She began to have strange cravings. One day, she found herself scooping a squid out of a tank at Fisherman's Wharf and swallowing it whole when no one was looking. As she grew close to her due date, Minerva knew she had a difficult decision to make. She knew, as a single mother, an illegal alien at that, that she must give her child up for adoption. "This must be what Earthlings call grief." She felt a sharp pain in her heart as she stared into her son's almond-shaped eyes for the first and only time. He let out a cry that sounded like a dolphin in distress while she telepathed all of her love and knowledge to him. Her lawyer told her that her baby had gone to a nice couple from Mountain View. Minerva liked the name they had chosen for him. "Stephen," she said slowly. "Stephen Jobs. It has a nice sound to it," she said sadly. Minerva left San Francisco and spent the next 10 years hitchhiking back and forth across the country. She stayed with friends in Roswell for a spell and then grew restless. She moved from place to place, always trying to fill the black hole in her heart. "This must be what humans call heartbreak," Minerva wailed as she cried herself to sleep. One night, while she was hitchhiking in the pouring rain outside of Boston, a handsome young man wearing love beads picked her up. He told her his name was Timothy, and he was working on his PhD at Harvard in the psychology department. She thought he was coming on to her when he asked her up to his apartment and asked if she wanted to trip. "Sure, why not? It's not like I have anywhere else to be," Minerva said as she leaned back on Timothy's couch. She opened her mouth wide as he popped a tiny paper square with an orange sun on her tongue. The trip started out smooth at first, but then it grew turbulent. She could see the bright lights of Venus beckoning her home, and she waved goodbye to Timothy as she broke through the Earth's atmosphere and went hurtling through space towards home. Her broken heart healed quickly on Venus. She married two nice young men, and they had children of their own, but she never stopped missing her Earthling son. She cried those strange human tears when she heard that he had died at the young age of 56. Minerva is now the queen of Venus, and she is loved by all. For the most part, she leads a fulfilling life, but she still gets restless every year on the birthday of her Earthling son. That's when she takes one of those little tabs with the sunshine on it that Timothy gave her and travels back to Earth. She checks in on her skincare company, La Mer. It turns out those formulas were really good for something after all. And then she gets in her Lamborghini and drives out to Landers and takes a sound bath at the Integratron. Afterwards, she drives out to Giant Rock and sits quietly as she thinks about her first love and the boy she never knew. Minerva wipes her eyes as the girls giggle loudly. They are taking selfies now with their cell phones. She watches them and her heart begins to ache again. If only she and George could have finished their work, maybe Earthlings would not be so self-absorbed and they could live happier lives. "Is the carrot cake good?" she asks the girls as she drops her silver scarf at their feet. The girls scramble to pick it up. Minerva is quick as she brushes their iPhones into her satchel and disappears out into the farmer's market.
"We Are Not Safe Here," a tribute to Philip K. Dick, by Frank Slater. Read by Jean-Paul Garnier, with music by Luke Poole. "We Are Not Safe Here," a tribute to Philip K. Dick. Richard picked up the finished manuscript and placed it in the safe. He turned the dial and left the room, locking his door on the way out. He headed down the driveway and across the unmowed lawn, got into his beater, and headed for the store. Shaking his head, Martin awoke to the sound of the clicking of the safe knob. He could feel the woozy after effects of M-gel. His head swam in disorientation. He had no idea where he was. Martin took two steps forward and tripped over a soft body that squealed gently as he fell onto it. Finding a flashlight in his pocket, he turned it on and realized that he had tripped over a young woman. Two other bodies were emerging from unconsciousness and writhed with post-trip moans. "Where did you people come from?" demanded Martin. The woman he had tripped over replied, "I was just getting off the bus. I was fleeing my hometown. I don't know why I would have ended up here." Now standing, a man named Nicholas came forward. "Why are you asking all the questions? You tell me what I'm doing here. You don't want to be caught messing with me. I know some folks that you would not like to meet." The other man that had not yet spoken now did. Hey, let's not get all worked up here. My name is Raymond, and I don't know what I'm doing here either. For now, it's good that we at least have a little light. Looks to me like we're in some kind of windowless cell. It would be great if everyone could introduce themselves, and then we can look for a way out of here." Martin wasted no time. He knew at least part of what was going on. "All right, look, folks. I'm military, and I can tell you at least one thing. When I awoke, I was still suffering the effects of M-gel. From the looks of you all, I'd say you were too. I've been involved in some experiments, so this does not come as a surprise to me. But you three are another story." "I do feel woozy. But I don't know why I would have been given something like that. I've never even heard of it. By the way, my name is Regina," said the woman. Nicholas looked as though he had had his fair share of experience with drugs. His lips curled when he heard the name M-gel mentioned. He had a squirrely demeanor, causing both Martin and Raymond to eye the man suspiciously. They were also eyeing each other with caution. "It looks like there's some stuff around here. Let's all have a look. Martin, why don't you check around the edges and see if there's some kind of door or something," said Raymond, taking the lead, eager to find a way out. "There's a whole case of M-gel over here," shouted Nicholas, betraying his knowledge of the substance. Martin, the military man, came through once again. "That's great news. This stuff is made out of the same crap that they make plastic explosives out of. You just found our ticket out of here, buddy." Raymond was staggered by this. "You're telling me that the military uses the same substance to blow stuff up that it used to drug us? You people are really twisted." Martin grimaced as he responded, "I don't make this stuff up. I just work for them. People will try and get high on anything. The military happened to just find out and exploit it. I was a voluntary test subject. I tell you, that stuff packs a punch. Makes you real susceptible to suggestion. Who cares what it's used for if it can get us out of here? I say we rig it up and blow our way out of here, unless you feel like staying in captivity," said Nicholas. Regina stood at his side, nodding her approval. "It will take me a while to set this up. I'm gonna have to rig a fuse. Raymond, Nicholas, you guys come over here and help me. Regina, you see if you can find the thinnest spot in the wall." Martin had no problem taking charge, and was doing a better job of it than Raymond. The two men joined him in fashioning the bomb, and Regina did as ordered. searching the crack along the floor to find a weak spot. When she thought she had, she pointed it out to Martin, who grumbled with approval. Nicholas and Raymond were next to useless and did little to help Martin aside from argue with each other. Raymond was a revolutionary, a fighter for social justice, and a member of the anti-war party. Nicholas was a narc that worked for the police, ratting on drug dealers and whatnot. To Raymond, Nicholas was worse than the enemy. He would rather side with a military man than a narc, any day. But for some reason, both of them made the unspoken decision to not let the others know that they knew each other. They had bad blood in the street, but it was not going to help them get out of this cage. Martin worked with skill, and in not too much time, he had fashioned a fuse that would work to ignite the plastic explosive M-gel. The four captives made what little barricade they could from the rest of the boxes and detritus stored in the cell. Martin placed the makeshift bomb at the weak spot Regina had pointed out, then joined the others hiding behind the boxes. The bomb went off with mighty force, blowing all of the boxes on top of the captives. It was successful in blowing the door in their prison wide open. They stepped out and marveled at the fact that they were standing in a small office. Still hazy from M-gel, they all squinted in the sunlight, so much brighter than Martin's flashlight. "We were inside a safe? How did we all fit in there?" asked Martin. "Forget that. We should search this place and find out why we're here," said Raymond. Nicholas was wasting no time. He had already begun to rifle through the desk drawers in search of something. The others joined him, not finding much of interest, but trashing the place in the process. Exiting the door and finding himself in the living room, Raymond spied a shortwave radio transmitter in a corner. This, he pointed out to Martin in excitement, for next to it were pages of scribbled code and several check stubs. Both Martin and Regina came to see. "These codes look like military, and look, some of them match up with these check numbers." Martin pocketed the paperwork as he explained the find to Raymond. "You grab that transmitter, it will come in handy. Now let's get out of here before someone finds us." Meanwhile, still in the office, Nicholas found the stash of M-gel in the closet and took the lot. Dangerous stuff, but the street value was high, and he knew the right buyers. The others joined him back in the office, all suggesting that they get out of there. Nicholas agreed, and they fled out of the office through the living room and out the front door into the decaying suburbs of what could have been any urban sprawl town. Regina stopped in the front yard. "Wait. They're going to be looking for the four of us. We should do something to throw them off our trail, or make it look like there is more of us involved in the breakout." She had a point, and they all knew it. Raymond reacted with gut instinct, picked up a rock, and hurled it through the office window. "This way, maybe they'll think that someone helped us get out," said Raymond, already beginning to run down the street, his pace hampered by the transmitter. Richard arrived back from the store and was shocked by the disarray of his place. It had been ransacked, his safe destroyed, his new manuscript was burnt, and worst of all, the M-gel was missing. At least with the drugs gone, he could call the police. The taller of the two policemen looked down at Richard with an expression of pure disgust. "You say someone broke in? This safe has been blown from the inside. Are you sure that you didn't do this yourself?" In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Landing in Landers by Laura Bogner, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. We Are Not Safe Here, a tribute to Philip K. Dick, by Frank Slater, with music by Luke Poole. Theme music by Dane Liscombe. Be sure to visit us at www.spacecowboybooks.com.